At the age of 36, on the verge of completing a decade's worth of training as a neurosurgeon, Dr. Paul Kalanithi's health began to falter. A CT scan confirmed what Paul suspected. He had stage 4 lung cancer, widely disseminated. One day he was a doctor who had devoted himself to treating the dying, and the next, he was a patient struggling to live. Just like that, the future he and his wife Lucy had imagined, the culmination of decades of striving, evaporated. On March 9th, 2015, less than 2 years after the diagnosis, Paul passed away at the age of 37. Paul's death precipitated an amazing outpouring of love and grief in the United States and abroad. A few of the essays he'd written about his illness during the last year of his life found an enormous audience online. In fact, those essays have been brought together in the new book, When Breath Becomes Air. Kalanithi approaches the subject of his own mortality from the dual perspective of a doctor who spent his days tending to the sickest of people and a terminally ill patient who suddenly finds himself in the state between life and death. Lucy Kalanithi is Paul's wife, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being with us. At what point did you know that your husband expressed a desire to write about what he was going through?
So as soon as he was diagnosed, when he was 36 with terminal lung cancer, he knew, and I knew, that there was no cure. And so he'd always been a reader and casually a writer with a really great love for literature, and he turned to literature and writing to kind of help make sense of his situation.
In writing those essays, was he writing for anyone other than himself?
That's a great question. I think he was writing kind of for two reasons. One was really to help make sense of what was going on. I think he was really actively processing, facing his mortality as he wrote. And you can tell that when you read the essays and the book, and really thinking about both dying and how to live. And then he did hope that his writing would have an audience, and that, we're all sort of connected through the difficulties that happen in our lives, and the question is, how do we cope with them and move forward, even while dying or knowing that we're mortal? And so I think he was very interested in connecting with people and having and sharing his writing.
At what point did he bring you in on the process? Did you know, and did he share these essays right away with you?
I kind of read what he was writing all along as he wrote it, not literally looking over his shoulder. Although sometimes if we were, close or snuggling or whatever, and he happened to be writing, he was writing a lot. But it kind of in real time, daily or weekly, I got to see what he was working on.
When you look at some of the things that he's talking about in here of what makes life worth living, especially when you're dying, and what do you do when the future isn't there as prominently, and obviously what it is like to have a child in this process. Were these things that you also discussed in depth?
Yes, definitely. Especially after he was diagnosed with incurable cancer, we did face some big decisions, such as should we go back to work until he's, unable to work? Should we have a child? How should we spend that time? And ultimately, we sort of said yes to the first two questions, and then he sort of began writing. He went back to work as a neurosurgeon and then started writing, and then when he was too ill to operate, he was sort of well into working on this book.
You outline in the book the very few times that he cried, one of those being the day that he was diagnosed.
That's right.
As far as the other emotions, pretty even then.
Yeah, he really sort of like had this quality of equanimity. I was just thinking about The Wasteland, which is a poem that he really loved, sort of this long poem by T.S. Eliot. And the last lines of The Wasteland are Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And Shanti is sort of this, it's a Sanskrit word that means really profound peace. And it was interesting because throughout the process of being ill, Paul sort of had this air of really profound peace. He didn't actually ask why me. I think as a surgeon and with me as a physician too, we'd seen really challenging things happen to our patients and their families, and sort of knew that bad things can happen, and it was our turn. And so he really was able to face it and really look his mortality in the face, so to speak. And he didn't shy away from it. I mean, he really felt alive and purposeful, and like his life had meaning until the end. And he was interested in those big questions of how do we make our lives meaningful, even before he became terminally ill. And this was obviously a real chance to reflect on that.
I was really interested in the section in the book where he's talking about the graduation from his residency. And because there's a point where he realizes, as he writes, that some look at it as he's dealing with a cancer, and some are saying, oh, well, you know, he had a concern that he was using cancer as an excuse not to take full responsibility for his patients.
Yeah, so that was an interesting piece. Basically, because he had some physical challenges after being diagnosed with metastatic cancer, for example, he had some more fatigue than he had had before when he was healthy, and he had some back pain. He needed to modify the work that he was doing. For example, he wasn't able to do a 14-hour-long surgery as he had been before, and so his colleagues were very supportive of his desire to return to work, and of course, they made sure that he was, you know, mentally acute and physically adept at the things that he needed to do, but they helped him have work accommodations, like not doing surgeries that were so long or physically arduous. And he didn't stay in the hospital overnight as he had before. And then he kind of realized that those work schedule and physical modifications were actually interfering with his ability to really spend time with his patients and take care of his patients in a full way rather than partially. And so then he really worked with his mentors and with his colleagues to really be sure that he was sort of doing the full work of a neurosurgeon even while partially debilitated. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. And in fact, he writes in the book, on the other hand, it was a good excuse, damn it.
I mean, that's just like the work of a neurosurgeon is so hard. Sort of like, oh, well, maybe this is a chance for me to just take a breather, you know. But he really was very true to his values. And so I think not everybody would return to work. And that would be perfectly fine. I think a lot of people would say, oh, I have a terminal illness. I'm never going to go back to work. Maybe I want to travel, or maybe I want to do something else. But for him, he said, I think I'm going to go back to work as a surgeon. And it's the same reason I chose to do it before I was sick. It was really a deeply thought decision, and I want to continue.
Obviously, when diagnosed with a terminal illness, there is never a good time. But when it came to his career and what he had been working so hard for himself, for you, and for your family, the timing was really crummy.
Yeah, you're right that there's never a good time. I think what you're referring to is the fact that he was right at the end of his training.
Right.
We were both just starting our careers in medicine. We hadn't yet had a child, but we'd always dreamed of doing that. And so I think he put it really well one time when he said, you know, until you die, you're actually alive. And so many of those decisions, our answers remained somewhat the same as before he got sick. And it wasn't that we were not aware that he had a terminal illness. I mean, we did those decisions with our eyes open, but they were sort of strongly felt, measured decisions that we talked a lot about.
What did he want to, and ultimately what do you hope people get out of the book?
He really wanted to share, he was a really interesting person, and part of the reason I fell in love with him is that he was a physician who also had gone to graduate school in literature and in history of philosophy of science, and he thought he would be a writer initially and then came to medicine because of his really deep interest in understanding the human condition and the struggles and triumphs that we all go through in our lives and how we make sense of, how we make our lives meaningful. And so he wrote about that, kind of drawing on all of his experience and education, but then also during the time that he was a terminally ill patient. And so I hope people will respond to, and I've seen readers respond to the ideas in the book about making meaning despite the fact that we're all mortal.
The name of the book is When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi. Lucy Kalanithi is his wife and wrote the epilogue to the book and is our guest this morning. Lucy, thank you very much for sharing with us. I thank you so much and wish you all the best.
It's really my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi. It is published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.